Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
This happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Time to talk some football with the professor, John Clayton. If you guys have questions for John, you can text those in right now to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Try to get to as many of those as we can before he leaves us for the day. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. We got a ton to talk about. Before we get into the Seahawks, I've got to ask you about the game last night because it was interesting reading social media and reading the outrage over the Eagles and the Washington football team's game, and the Giants fans are mad at the Eagles, and Eagles fans are kind of like, well, we improved our draft position and we weren't going to the playoffs anyway. So I get it as a fan. If you're a Giants fan, everything hinges on that game. But at the same time, I'm thinking, where do you get off being upset at them? They don't owe you anything. You're a division rival. They win another game. How about that? How about you handle your own business rather than relying on your rival to bail you out?
Yeah, that's a good point. Because, again, it's like I thought it was just a terrible decision, you know, to take out the young quarterback and put in Nate Sudfeld, who's on a one-year, $2 million contract, and he was supposed to be the backup. But what are you trying to prove in putting him in at that part of the game? It's like, hey, he's a free agent next year, and he's most likely not going to be back, and so you needed to see him play in the fourth quarter. I thought that was crazy, but also the outrage, you're right. It's like if you're the Giants, hey, just beat the Cowboys. And again, just hope that the Redskins or the Washington football team, not the Redskins, but the Washington football team is going to lose. But it's like, was it going to be any different with Sudfeld, or was it going to be any different with Jalen Hurts? I don't think so. And it wasn't like Hurts was lighting things up and doing a lot.
Exactly.
Again, very, very curious decision to see that they make that switch at that time.
And you've got to believe, sorry, Dave, just quickly, you've got to believe that Peterson and the owner were in on this on some level. Do you think he just made that decision on his own, or do you think that was something they got together and said, listen, this game doesn't really matter. We're out of the playoff run, so let's improve our draft position?
No, I can't see Jeff getting involved in that. I think he's going to leave the decision to the coach because, I mean, he's not like some owners that want, like, Jerry Jones to be involved in every decision. It's like, oh, so that's a decision you make. And I know he's not been happy with a lot of the decisions this year, both by Carson Wentz, both by Doug Peterson, both by Howie Roseman, the general manager. But at this stage, you know, if Doug gets passed tomorrow when they meet, then I think it's going to be okay. But I can't see myself with Jeff knowing that he would get himself involved in something like that.
Hey, John, it's kind of interesting at the end of the game, and I guess we didn't really notice it at the time, but the last little sort of flip play to David Moore somehow gets him $100,000, and it seemed like Russell was kind of knew about it. But just how that whole thing goes down, and I'm trying to remember, what kind of a pay cut did David Moore take going into the season?
He went from, $2.133 million down to about, I think, $825,000, something like that.
Ooh, wow.
Because his base
one.
Salary is around that. So, again, he got the escalator, and the escalator for the fourth-year guys were $2.133 million. And then, of course, with the idea that it's like, hey, if you don't take the pay cut, you're going to get cut. And, you know, David decided, hey, I want to stay here. So, yeah, he took over a $1 million pay cut. And so, you know, if you're management, if you're Pete Carroll, if you're John Snyder, you can't feel bad about that. I mean, but the only thing is you might want to tip off the coach that might be doing this. But, of course, how much time is left? I mean, the game's ended. It was a dramatic finish with the 20 points in the fourth quarter. I mean, you're not just concentrating on getting on the field and running out the clock. But then you call that play and you go, whoa, where'd that one come from?
Yeah, it was kind of interesting, but it seemed like Russ kind of knew what the deal was. And
do you think David might have reminded him?
You know, that's what I was wondering, John. I actually was like, hey, Russ, you know, if I get one more catch or whatever the number was, yeah, that might have been. But, you know, and I'm also kind of like, hey, look, he took a pay cut. He took one for the team. But also if you're the owner or GM or whatever, you're going, well, that did also just cost us $100,000. I mean, that's no small amount. But, heck, you know, probably wanted him to have it because he had a great year.
Yeah, I mean, it cost him $100,000, but also, I mean, you gain the advantage of getting, you know, playoff money coming in, television revenue from the playoff money. You don't get anything, unfortunately, with the stands or with fans in the stands. You don't get anything there. But, I mean, you know, you come back and, you know, you can handle $100,000. I mean, it's going to be different than some of those big bonuses. They're $250,000 and $500,000 and all those different things. But, you know, give some credit to Russell for taking care of his guy.
I thought that was a great move. I thought that was awesome. Nice. Hey, what do you make of the offense, John? We were talking about that. I mean, it feels like, you know, the first nine games or so of the season, I mean, they're leading the league in scoring. It felt like any play they called worked. It was just, it was on fire, and it needed to be because of the way the defense was playing. But now they've reversed roles, and the defense is playing really well, and the offense seems like they've lost their rhythm. In the first three quarters of this game, were dreadful, offensively speaking. What are you seeing from the offense? Just maybe it's the play calling, maybe it's Russell, the O-line. What are you looking at with this offense?
What I'm looking at is the schedule. Because, I mean, the schedule just kind of flipped. Because, I mean, you look at the first five games, which are non-division games, and how many good defenses did they really face? Okay, New England, I mean, that's not a very good defense. You know, Atlanta's not a good defense at all. Minnesota was terrible this year. Miami was okay, so that was respectable in that part. But, I mean, you look at those first five games, and you really didn't see any good defenses, and you can take advantage of that. And so now they go against this one stretch in the second half of the season where the defenses are better than expected. I mean, you can see that the Giants, Washington, those defenses are pretty good. You know, Philadelphia has a good defense. The Rams, they faced twice. They have the best defense right now statistically in football. And San Francisco is, you know, a little bit above the better, middle of the pack as far as where they are in defense. And so you look at like seven out of their last eight games, they basically affect respectable top 14 defenses. And I also include Arizona. You know, now Arizona's kind of faded at the end here, but when they were playing the Seahawks, they were like top 14. So you're playing tougher defenses, what makes it tougher. I think that you can see the teams have kind of figured some things out, you know, playing a little bit more zone to try to prevent some of the big plays downfield. And if you can't run the ball, just like you see with the Rams, then you're going to have trouble getting the play action passes. But, you know, you manage it a little bit different. I noticed that there's been a little bit of a big drop-off on first down throws by Russell, because at one point when Russ was cooking, you know, he was like one of the top three as far as first down passes. You know, they're still like about top 10 or something of that nature. But they're just going through a little bit of a rough stretch right now, but part of it is because of the schedule.
Hey, John, you know, it's what a turnaround by the Miami Dolphins. It sucks for them, though, 10-6, and they don't make the playoffs. But you got to be really happy with the season that they've had down there and what's a pretty tough AFC this year.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, the tough part is you just get absolutely blown away by 30 points in the last game by Buffalo, a team that by all rights, you know, could have probably just put out backups and not care about it, kind of like Kansas City and Pittsburgh, but they wanted that number two seed so they can get the chance to get the extra home game. So I thought that was kind of interesting too. But no, I think you look at it, I mean, Tua has been up and down. He was certainly down yesterday. He just did not play at all. And, you know, if had they won, then all of a sudden you're looking at an Indianapolis team that would have had 11 wins and not make the playoffs. And so it's just one of those weird years with the haves, nots and all that. I mean, he had 12 teams right now with 10 losses, and then a lot of those teams were 11 to 12 loss teams. So a lot of teams are being fed that you can have the winning, and that's why it really helped the AFC, because they had more bad teams than they did the NFC. So it's just one of those things. But again, it was a great season. Now the debate's going to be, who's going to be coach of the year? Do you give it to Brian Flores, who's 10-6 and missed the playoffs and got blown out in the last game? Or do you give it to Kevin Stefanski, who took a Cleveland Brown team that hasn't made the playoffs since, what, 2002, and they made the playoffs? Do you give it to him, or do you give it to Mike Tomlin? Midseason, I was giving it to Mike Tomlin when its undefeated part was going. Right now, I give it to Kevin Stefanski.
Hey, as far as the coaching changes go, John, we're seeing, you know, vacancies being created, guys getting fired, and Marrone is not a surprise. Certainly Gase, the only surprise with him is that he made it to the end of the season. I was a little surprised with Anthony Lynn. I thought he might make it. They won four in a row to end the season. I know they still a below 500 team, but it seemed like things had turned around for him and they were headed the right direction. Any surprise that he was let go?
Not really. No, you kind of anticipated it because they had that one stretch where, you know, they couldn't win close games. They were blowing big leads. His coaching decisions were terrible. You know, the special teams were about as bad as you've ever seen in a National Football League. So the expectation, even with that good finish with the four wins, is that he was going to be let go. Because remember, a couple years ago, He was at 12 wins. And then this is a talented team. I mean, this is better than a 7-9 team. I mean, because you look at the players they have on defense. Now, they didn't have Keenan Allen in the game Sunday. You know, he was out, and so they were missing a receiver. But this is still a good team, and you have the rookie of the year at quarterback. Because, I mean, you know, each week Justin Herbert throws for 300-plus yards, and it's like you have a hot quarterback, and you still can't get past 7 wins.
Hey, John, pretty big news, I guess, in Denver. The Broncos decide John Elway said he's going to hire a GM and just kind of be, he's going to be kind of they're both going to report to him, the head coach and the GM, I guess. Do you see this coming?
I did not. No, that was the only surprise of Black Monday, because, you know, we had the three coaching firings. You know, you can see that all the names that most people have been linking to jobs are all getting contacts and different things of that nature. But no, that was a big surprise, because you knew there was a lot of heat, and particularly the fact that, what, they only won 5 games this year. Drew Locke still hasn't worked out as the quarterback. And so you can see that since Peyton Manning, he's done a bad job of picking quarterbacks. And I think that, you know, just to salvage things, because you know they're still having ownership issues with family member fighting family member for ownership. I think he just took the tack. It's like, okay, here's the deal. I'm going to step back. I'll still have the authority to run things, but I'm not making the personnel decisions. Let's get a true general manager in here to do it. And so that did come as a surprise, because now what you're looking at, what, there's 6 general manager jobs that are open.
Hey, John, the 360 asking, and again, you guys can text in your questions to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. 360 says, John, does the Rooney rule apply to coordinator and executive roles as well as head coach, or are those doors still less open for minority candidates?
No, it's open. It's definitely in there for executives. And there's, I think, a slight rule in there for coordinators. They've upgraded it and upgraded it substantially. Now, again, you can't force an owner to hire somebody he doesn't want to hire. But now the interview process, because, like, for example, I know you have to have 2 minorities on the coach when you're doing the coaching search. I think 2 minorities on the general manager search. And I don't know on the coordinator search, because technically that's not necessarily a team decision. It's the coach's decision who gets to hire, because, I mean, he should have, in most cases, other than maybe the Jets and a few other teams, the ability to hire the assistant coach that he wants.
Hey, John, what's going on in Detroit? Because Daryl Bevel took over. What do you think that they're going to do? Are they going to continue with him?
No.
They're going to try to find a new head coach?
First, I got to see what they can do as far as getting a general manager. And you know that they have interest in John Snyder. We'll see what the Seahawks do. But what the Seahawks should do is Jody Allen pay John Snyder. I mean, he is right now one of the highest paid GMs in the league, but he's still below John Elway, who's no longer a GM, and he's below John Lynch, and I think he's also below Kevin Colbert in Pittsburgh. And so, you know, he's still, you know, he needs a raise, and he's in the last year of his contract, and technically they can prevent him from going to the interview and prevent him from taking the job, just like they did in Green Bay situation a couple years ago. But, you know, I think the leading candidate appears to be Robert Saleh. Now, you know, the Chris Spielman's come in, and he's doing a lot of consulting work as far as helping out the front office situation. They put in for a whole bunch of coaches and a whole bunch of general manager info today to see, you know, where they're going to go. But no, I think that Daryl doesn't have much of a chance.
I was reading this story on the Jets where their CEO, Christopher Johnson, said that they're going to look for a head coach who can galvanize the entire team. And his quote is, I don't much like the term CEO, but it does describe what we're looking for. We want a head coach that coaches the entire team and his staff. So you don't have to be offensive or defensive. This is a coach for the entire team, which is very important to us moving forward. How much does that differ from their previous philosophy? Gase was looked at as an offensive mind. They want somebody who just, I guess, covers all the bases. Which candidate out there fits that description.
Well, it just gives you the idea, even though, again, it may not be a coach getting into a second job and maybe a first-time hire, that they'll give more consideration to defensive coaches. Now, you know, you still kind of wonder. You have guys like Jim Caldwell, Marvin Lewis, guys like that that are out there, and you wonder, you know, they should get some consideration because, again, they've done it. And they've been successful doing it. I mean, I know Marvin Lewis didn't win a playoff game, but he's been to the playoffs 7 times in Cincinnati. And, you know, nobody but Paul Brown can say something like that. And then you look at Marvin Lewis, I think, looks good. But Jim Caldwell should never have been fired in Detroit. You know, he got fired because they got tired of being 9-7 and just making the playoffs. And now, of course, you know, they're lucky to win 9 games in 2 years, particularly with the Matt Patricia hire. So it's one with the Jets. I mean, they keep on doing it pretty much the wrong way. But I think that, you know, they'll give some considerations to experience. They'll give some considerations to Sala, who, of course, you know, you can see the way he kind of manages the defense. If you watched yesterday, he kind of manages it like a CEO.
Remember, there was last year they had like video of him on the sidelines, that there's a coach that's in charge of restraining him from running on the field. Robert Saleh, because he gets so fired up. So, yeah, interesting.
I hope he does get a job because I think he deserves it. In fact, that's the one thing I was thinking of yesterday, particularly watching how he coached in the first half. And I even said it on the air. It's like, well, here's the good and bad news for Kyle Shanahan, is that the defense is exceeding expectation of how well they're playing, but it's only going to get Robert Saleh closer to getting out the door and getting a head coaching job.
Yeah, that's what I said, the same thing today on our show. I was like, yeah, the good news is we don't have to face him as a defensive coordinator anymore. Yeah, I mean, he's definitely gonna be somewhere else.
But you wonder if they're gonna go for Dan Quinn.
Yeah, that's a good thought.
I know they put in for Gus Bradley for an interview.
Yeah. Well, they sure are well coached, but and I'll answer this one. Why did KJ get snubbed for the Pro Bowl? It's because of the sacks,
right?
They take the outside backers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just looking at the text toy here.
But by the way, I was just looking at these numbers this morning, is that there was only like about 10 players in the league that got 10 or more sacks. Only 10.
Sacks way down.
Yeah, huh? Sacks are way down. I mean, they're down like 10% as far as the main number. But, yeah, there's only like about 10. And naturally, I mean, if you're looking at K.J. Wright, I mean, now he's going up as Za'Darius Smith, who had like, I think, 12.5 or 13.5 sacks. He's going against Khalil Mack. And so, you know, you can see the chances aren't there because, you know, the outside linebackers are going to be the ones getting the sacks, not necessarily the big plays.
Boy, if Jamal Adams played every single game this season, he might have led the league in sacks.
He might have, no question about it.
Can you imagine? Yeah, that's crazy. Oh, by the way, with him, John, what was your kind of read? I know Pete afterwards in the postgame said, he basically portrayed his shoulder problem as he'll be ready for the playoff game. But it was kind of weird watching that on TV because it looked like that looked like the face of a guy who was very, very disappointed and thinking, man, I'm finally getting to the point where I can go to the playoffs in my career, and yet I'm not going to be able to play, is what it looked like. But it seems like hopefully they're going to have him out there.
They'll need him because, again, it's like he's such an important player for this team. But, you know, I think the one thing that as we get to know Jamal Adams as a player and all those things, I think we can overreact to his emotions and his thoughts and all that stuff because, he's one of the most emotional players and energetic players I've ever seen. I mean, it's like, tell me a time when you see him coming off the field, even on a good play or a bad play, he doesn't show some kind of emotion. I mean, he's as animated as anybody I've ever seen in this league.
Yeah, he is. Hey, John, just to follow up on that Philly story, the 206 asking, is Peterson's job in Philly really safe?
I think so, yeah. I mean, we'll find out tomorrow because I know that Doug and Jeff Lurie are supposed to meet. I mean, you know, there can be a possible change. We now found out over the weekend, which nobody was surprised about, is that Howie Roseman, the general manager, is going to keep his job because, you know, nobody's going to be able to work the cap and come in there from the outside and fix it up when you're, you know, $60 million over and you got all these different issues with the cap. And so, you know, he gets to stay. You kind of wonder, you know, will Jeff Lurie tell him, hey, we need you to get more of a GM, kind of like a John Elway type of thing where he pulls back a little bit. We'll see if that happens. But I think at this stage, there seems to be the understanding that Doug's going to stay there.
He wouldn't make a move like that in a game if he didn't have some level of security, right?
You would think so because, again, it's like, I mean, and he's lucky that there's no fans in the stands because, I mean, how bad do you think the boos were going to be on that one?
Man. Yeah. Yeah, he might not have gotten out of there alive.
That's the thing. They even have the cardboard things, Boo. The cardboard fans.
Yeah, the cardboard fans were throwing beer bottles too,
and batteries, and yeah, that's great.
Yeah. What, John? What do you think is the problem? In obviously Doug Marrone out in Jacksonville, but also it seems like a franchise that I don't know. There just seems to be something wrong down there because a few years ago when the Seahawks went down and played them in 2017. They had so much talent on that team, and it just they never went anywhere.
Yeah, what ended up happening is that Tom Coughlin came in and took a little bit of the authority for picking players away from David Caldwell, because Caldwell at least had built that team up. And again, this is a team that I think has been to one playoff in a decade, maybe even a little longer than that. One trip to the playoffs, and that was in 2017. But right. Their talent was such that they were going to the playoffs and made the run to the championship game with Blake Bortles at quarterback. Which is amazing when you think about it, how bad Blake Bortles is.
And they never had a franchise quarterback.
Mark Brunell was a franchise quarterback. He and Tom Coughlin to the playoffs many, many years and got him to a championship game. So that's the one that they had. But what I look at is that they had eight Pro Bowl guys on the one team, eight guys who have been to the Pro Bowl, and one by one they kept losing them. Whether they traded him, cut him, whatever, and the next thing you know, they're down to hardly anything right now. They got Miles Jack and Josh Allen, and that's about it.
Hmm. What do you think happens with Washington, the football team? They make it to the playoffs. Alex Smith is such a tremendous story, but I don't think anybody's looking at him as their franchise guy for years to come, and they got rid of Haskins, obviously. So what do you think happens there?
They'll go get a quarterback. I think it's pretty evident that that's going to be the case. They've already cut Dwayne Haskins, and he hasn't landed anywhere. Not that anybody thought he would this late in the season. But I think you can see that when you look at Alex, and again, it's great to see a veteran quarterback like that who's been to seven playoff games, 32 years old, and doing as well as he did. Actually, he's about 35, I think. But again, for him to – I think they can't count on him coming back. So they're certainly not going to pay him the money that he's making because, again, he's made great money, and a lot of that's because he's had the injury that kept him up for 2 years, and because he had injury guarantees, they couldn't count his salary because of the injury guarantees. But I'd have to think that they're going to see if they want to keep him as a backup, or I can't see him paying him like $16-18 million a year.
Yeah. John, good stuff. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, there you go. John Clayton with us every day at 4 o'clock. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts brought to you by Coors Light Made to Chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Well, we touched on it. Russell Wilson did something really, really cool for David Moore yesterday. We'll let you hear what he had to say about it, what Pete Carroll had to say about it. It's coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.